This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News, 98.3, 102.1. You're listening to WCRS-FM, and I'm in the studio with Eddie Pfau. Eddie Pfau, well-known attorney. I have to ask you this question, Eddie. What kind of name is Pfau?
Bob, you know, my whole life I've had to carry that name with me.
P to the F to I know. The A to
I've
the
been,
U.
It's been Pafew. It's been everything. I've never liked my name. In fact, there was several times I threatened to change it. My dad always said, go ahead and do it. But actually, Bob, Pfau is the German word for peacock. And my family can trace their roots all the way back to the Black Forest in southern Germany. They were the keepers of the peacocks for the Bavarian monarchy. So that's something that I'm kind of proud of.
All right. People who say ich bin rather than ich bin.
Yes,
never trust
exactly.
Those Prussians.
Exactly.
Eddie, tell us a little about your educational background. What qualifies you to be a judge?
Well, you know, Bob, I'm the youngest of five children from Cincinnati, Ohio. I went to Anderson High School on the east side of town and attended the University of Cincinnati. I studied political science. When I graduated, I didn't have a job, so I started volunteering at City Hall in Cincinnati, and eventually the mayor gave me a job. So I worked down there, and it was great as a political science.
Who was the mayor at that time?
At that time, you know, we had a charter party system, so they rotated the mayor every year, and it wasn't Jerry Springer, and it wasn't Ken Blackwell.
I was hoping you'd say Jerry Springer.
No, no, no.
And I told him, do not write a check to a hooker.
No. It was a guy named Arnold Bortz, he's a charterite, so I worked for him for a year.
And Blackwell was a
charterite. He started as a charterite, and then he defected and went Republican. Imagine that. I came to the conclusion that I had no job opportunities. I needed to go to law school. So I came to Columbus, Ohio in August of 1986.
All right. But what takes you from being from law school to being an attorney to deciding to run for judge?
Right. Well, when I came to law school, first of all, when I was in law school, I went to law school at night at Capitol. And I started working for Ron O'Brien, the city attorney, and I did intake in their office while I went to law school at night. And it wasn't easy. It was tough. I dealt with some, you know, domestic violence victims and people coming in off the streets wanting to file criminal charges. And it was really tough. When I came up with the idea to run for judge, I was sitting in Dirty Dungaree's laundromat on campus doing my laundry. And I read in the paper that Judge Mason was leaving. And, you know, I really liked Judge Mason a lot. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, who's going to be in his place, you know? So I turned to my friend. He's a photographer named Don Grimm. And I jokingly said, hey, Don, take a picture of me for my campaign. And it was just a joke. Well, the next day he came back with a really nice photograph of me. And it was kind of like looking in the mirror. And then I looked at that picture and I said, you know what, I can do this. I've been doing this a long time. I can run for office. And it was at that moment where, you know, I called all my friends and I said, hey, you know what, I want to do this. And that's how it started. And I feel like time is right. I'm 50 years old.
All right. So Mason resigned from domestic court, or some would call it family court. Tell us about your experience. What makes you qualified to be in domestic or family court?
You know, when I first started off practicing law, I went out on my own right away, and I had an apartment above Larry's Bar. I bet a lot of people know that bar, above Larry's on campus. It's no longer there now. So I started practicing law up there, and I started doing criminal law. And it was pretty intimidating, and got on the juvenile court appointment list, and I did a case with Judge Yvette McGee Brown, and I was a guardian, and she took me aside and said, wow, I really like your work, and I really would like you to start doing guarding work. And so I did. And it just took off from there. And so, you know, my experience, that court is not just about divorce. I worked as a guardian ad litem for 23 years. So I had an opportunity to go to a lot of homes, Bob. I mean, I got to see the inside of every home, from the rich to the poor. I've dealt with so many troubled families and troubled children. And so my experience there has not only been in divorce court, but as a guardian ad litem, but also doing abuse, neglect, dependency cases, and also civil protection orders, juvenile traffic matters, child support. I feel like, honestly, I've dealt with every aspect of our family court here in Franklin County. And, you know, there's not one aspect that I have, there's no area that I have not done.
All right, and tell our listeners again, what is a guardian ad litem?
Okay, a guardian ad litem is an individual who's charged with the duty of representing a child's best interest. And our job is to investigate and offer the court some insight into what is in the best interest of the child. And that's hard to do because I have to interview both parents and relatives and grandparents, and I have to make some kind of independent judgment. Now, Bob, you know what? When you do something like that, one of the most important things, I think, is not to bring up my own values into it or my childhood into it or my parents into it. My job is to look at it objectively and to see inside these people individually and try to find the good in each of them and then apply it to the law. And it's not easy, and it's stressful. And but I feel that I did a really good job of trying to settle these cases and bring these parents together. And that's kind of why I feel I'd be a good judge in Franklin County.
Well, I'm a lawyer, too. I've been in domestic court about 3 times and realized I never wanted to go back. A couple domestic cases.
Yeah, this is my last time going back.
A custody case is that, in many ways, it's a very emotionally intense place to be. Sometimes you're dealing with families, right, in many cases in crisis.
Everyone's in crisis, and it's very sad. And, you know, I'll talk to you a little bit more about the ideas I have to fix it, but... You know, there are days you go down there and, you know, you say to yourself, how do you act as an attorney and somebody that cares at the same time? And there seems to be sometimes a disconnect between being a lawyer, being an advocate, and being a human being. And trying to balance that, those three things are tough. But I'm not going to lie to you. There's been days I've been really sad and really hurt to see the pain. And that's part of the finesse and the talent that you have to do the job.
What perspectives would you bring to the court, particularly in terms of reforms? Well, what would you like to see happen down there that would be different if we elected Eddie Pfau?
You know, I tell you, having sat outside the courtroom waiting for cases to be called, having seen so much, I have a lot of great ideas. One of the things is that when you go down to domestic relations...
So let me get this right. What you're waiting to be called before...
Yeah, okay. That's my first...
You're out there going, right, hey.
Right, this is my...
First thing I make sure that attorneys wouldn't be sitting around wasting their time...
Right, exactly.
...running up a bill on their client.
Well, yeah, but it's not only those, but it's also the court-appointed attorneys who are being paid nothing. But the reform, the whole idea is there's a lot of reflecting time as you sit in the hallway. The first thing I want to do is I want to do something about the docket. You don't bring that many people into the courthouse at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Well, yeah, the cattle call.
No, it's ridiculous. I mean, and it's
they
also
have it there. Yeah. They haven't. I've never figured that out. It's like, okay, you know, particularly on a Monday,
how
is it humanly possible?
How do you have like 25 cases on your docket? So you have, you know, 2 sets of parents, a bunch of children, you know, probation officers, you got social workers, I mean, grandmas, grandpas. It's really not healthy. It's unhealthy because it's germy. So what I want to do, Bob, is I'd like to start court
at 8. It's like a big involuntary play
day. It is. It is exactly that. It is exactly that. So what I want to do is start my docket at 8. I want to stagger at 8:30 in the morning. 10:30, 1:30, and 3:30. Now, the funny thing about this is that...
Hey, there's a few judges that may be gone by that
Okay, that's my point. I don't think that the court is as active between 1:30 and 5. They're not.
Well, they're active. They're... active at other locations.
Okay, I'm not commenting on that. You know I can't. Yeah. I can't do that. So that's the first thing I want to do. Stagger the cases, okay? I want to increase the pay of court-appointed attorneys from guardian ad litems to regular attorneys. These guys are making peanuts. They have to go to homes. They have to put their lives at risk.
What does the guardian ad litem make?
Well, I don't know. I think 45... out of court, maybe 60 in court. I gave up on it. It wasn't financially worth it, and it was too much stress. So I don't know what the pay is, and I don't know how we'd pay for it. But there's got to be a way to pay for it. I also came across some programs here in town where we're not actually taking kids anymore to our juvenile court system if it's a misdemeanor. We're taking them to a program out, and I can't remember the name of it. I met this wonderful woman named Annie Curtis, and what she does out on Livingston is they take the kids, the police bring them directly there to their program where they're introduced and they have an opportunity to meet with counselors. And what we try to do, what they're trying to do is keep them from even coming down into the court system. Again, these are juveniles, okay, with very little understanding of what their rights are. But Bob, I got to tell you, my number one single most important issue is mental illness. And I can't emphasize this enough. Not only do we have individuals who are ending up in divorce court because of mental illness and their spouse could not tolerate them any further, but also we have people who are going through mental illness and stress because of the divorce. When your wife leaves you, your husband leaves you, and you sit outside that courtroom, I'm going to tell you the tension is so bad. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I want. If we have, Bob, mental health agencies that offer free services throughout the city, explain to me why we cannot have a mental health agency located in our court system, and not just domestic, but a place where individuals could meet with counselors while they're down there. And make referrals there, because this is the single, divorces and custody cases are the single most stressful thing there is. And I've watched more people lose it in the hallways before court. Bob, I don't think this is asking too much, and I know that we can get outside funding, get them offices, get counselors down there on a consistent, regular basis.
So stress, mental disorder right here. You would actually put the services where the problem is, Eddie.
Yes, I mean, right on hand. And I'm going to tell you something. When you get off that elevator and you see your future ex-wife, and you're not allowed to see your children, right, and you have a restraining order against
right.
you, or you have a civil protection order, where do you sit? What do you do? And now it's more tension because you've got family after family after family backed up waiting for the court to address their problems. And I'm going to tell you, the tension is it stresses me out, and I don't have I don't have kids, and I'm not married. So it's how simple, what a simple solution. And the way I approach this, Bob, is when I think about all the years I've been down there, I think I've seen it all, and there are a lot of creative, innovative ideas that we can incorporate to make the court flow better.
You got any other ones you'd like to throw out?
Well, of course, mediation. I mean, I truly believe that mediation is really important. And one of the things that I did as a guardian ad litem is that I went to Ohio State University, and I found a lot, or Columbus State, and I found a lot of students doing internships, and they got credit by shadowing me as a guardian. So I would get an opportunity to take them to homes with me. I'm thinking of all the internships that we could get for students who volunteer fifth floor, sixth floor of Franklin County Domestic Relations Court. Now, I'm not exactly sure what role they'll play, but I know they're volunteers right now screening parents for income levels. And so I see them down there. We can make use of potential social workers, and they can get credit in real-life experience. And, Bob, teaching at Columbus State, isn't that what it's all about, trying to relay real-life experiences to people?
All right. So you announced that you're running. You secured a nomination. What's been the reaction to that, your announcement?
Yeah, the reaction has been just amazing. I'm just shocked. I can't believe how many people have given me hugs and tell me how proud of me they are. I've been fortunate to find just the most amazing people to help me out. Wonderful young marketing company called Beck and Smith. They've been there for me, and they have just they've taken control of it. And I'm so honored. I'm so humbled by the entire process, and I can't believe how it's taken off. And I feel as if we're on our way. I feel good about the whole campaign. And Bob, it's about me not stressing. It's about me trying to win and do something right.
This is WCRS, your community radio station, 98.3, 102.1. I'm talking with Eddie Pfau, candidate for Domestic Relations Court of Franklin County, who has announced his candidacy, will be running in the fall. Is it difficult to campaign as a judicial candidate? Canon of ethics, things
right,
you can
right.
say.
Yeah, you know, recently Supreme Court Justice O'Connor made a comment that she was concerned that there was, you know, 40% of the people that voted for judges didn't even mark the box, and she thought that, you know, maybe there was a time that needs to occur where individuals can campaign more openly about where they're at and what they want to do. It is a nonpartisan race, and my politics is not relevant to my competency.
And that means there's no reference to
party
a party on the ballot.
Correct. And how stupid is that, to be honest with you? I mean, the idea that you would sit on a bench and you would offer some insight for legal reasons or social reasons and have an association with an organization.
I think it's better they run simply on names without people knowing anything else.
Right.
Anything that's a, say, a dam, O'Shaughnessy,
right.
or a funeral home.
Right.
Or a Brown, or a Pfeiffer.
Right, right, right.
Two F's,
right,
three
right,
F's.
Right, 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 right.
Or anyone, including my really good friend,
right,
and
right.
I really like her
yes,
as a judge,
yes.
Ann Taylor.
Ann Taylor,
anyone
right, yes.
Anyone who
yeah,
used to
exactly,
be associated
exactly,
with a department
right,
store
right,
name.
Right, right, exactly. And you know, Ann Taylor is a hero of mine. And I am sad though by the fact that I feel like the appointment of judges is just like an afterthought. It's like sometimes I don't know, like a partisan thing, like a gift, and it makes me sad because I'm working my butt off down there. And you know, I've seen Bob. I have seen. We've all seen individuals step onto the bench with no experience. I mean, none. And you're like, you know, and I don't understand. You know, it's taken a lot of courage for me to make the decision to run. And, you know, the idea that somebody would have kind of, if I can use this word, the balls, to just get on there and be a judge. And it doesn't, it's a disconnect.
And I won't mention any names, but some of those clearly are tied to aristocratic local.
Right.
Family political
right, right.
dynasties.
But, you know, Bob, all despite those people maybe, but you got to admit, we've had some bad judge situations here in town. I mean, seriously, it really concerns me what we've seen so many judges go down. And I've never had a bar complaint, okay? And I'm proud to say that in 23 years. You know, ethics is something that I think my dad, who's 90, who's still alive, instilled in me. And I feel, you know, Bob, I feel that... You know, I don't know. I feel like it is a very important job and not a stepping stone, you know.
All right. So how is the campaign going?
Well, it's going really good. I'm having fun. Gay Pride was amazing. I'm really happy with the whole thing.
So you marched in Gay Pride. And again, for our listeners, I think I've said this before. I was campaign manager for Ann Taylor for judge
yes.
in 1991. And worked as the media advisor on the Kilroy campaign, and they were the first two candidates to march in the Gay Pride Parade from major parties, and both of them won in upsets
yes.
over incumbents. And then the next year, all these Democrats, including Big Jim Carnes, who I'm on the record, I told him he should run for Bear of the Year, but didn't think it was very funny.
I don't know if you knew what that meant.
I saw it in a bar. It looked just like him. I think it was the Eagle at the time. They were having a contest. I'm
yeah.
Jim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but, may he rest in peace.
Right.
Yeah,
yes,
you know, the
yes,
sheriff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to go ahead and come out here on your radio show. I am gay, and I want to talk about that real briefly. That's really non-issue.
So you're gay and you're running for domestic
Yeah, I guess when you live with a guy after 20 years, you have to come out, right? So
does he know?
My boyfriend?
That's your coming up.
Yeah. No, but, you know, what I want to say about this issue of being gay, it's a secondary issue. I think my qualifications stand for themselves. You know, I think that what I think actually, Bob, is this. It is just another perspective that we need in family court. The issue of gay marriage is very important. You know, including the gay community in our process is very important. And I think that we need to give them access to our courts. Because when Ronnie and I broke up, we had no forum to go to. We had, you know, we weren't legally married. But, you know, he's my best friend in the world, and we figured it out. But there was no forum for us. And if you are a couple that have children, and one of you is a biological parent and the other one's not, these are tough legal issues that we have to grow up and address in our court system here in Franklin County, because this is one of the single largest gay communities. We cannot let them down.
So, what if somebody says, well, why would you want to put somebody who's gay on domestic relations court? Where's the children or the...
Okay.
But increasingly, yeah. Right, that
right.
It is an issue in
right.
terms of sperm donors.
Right.
And
right.
if you were at the march, there was a whole lot of gay couples
right.
with
children,
a lot of kids.
Children. And, you know, whether the way I interpret the law has nothing to do with what I do in my life and how I view other people, okay? In fact, it's an advantage because I feel like, maybe I've had a little bit of disadvantage having graduated from high school in 1981 with this daunting realization that I'm gay. And so it's always been an uphill battle, and I've had an empathy that I think that other people don't have, maybe. So as I practice as a guardian litem, and I've had some criticisms when they found out that I was gay, those
so who criticized the families?
Well, no,
families?
Occasionally somebody would use, you know, find out, I guess, word of mouth that I was gay. And I think that was some of the toughest and most painful times when I was told, or I'd get them, Bob, I had motions to remove me because I'm gay. No magistrate would ever do it. No judge would do it. You know, and they were offended, even more than I was offended. But it was a tough time.
So who are your judicial role models?
Oh, well, you know, I got to tell you, yesterday I think was the anniversary of Thurgood Marshall's death. Oh, no, resignation from the Supreme Court. Obviously, he is my hero, first African-American man to sit on the Supreme Court. I thought that, in my mind, not only was a great jurist, but he was a trailblazer. And I think that I'm not a trailblazer.
And one of the attorneys in...
well, I want to tell you...
In Brown versus Board of Education.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very, very important. And on a local level, I got to be honest with you, other than Ann Taylor, I got to tell you, my local judicial hero, and I'm so proud to say this, is Rick Pfeiffer. Rick is our city attorney. Rick has been the kindest, most appropriate public official I've ever seen. In fact, when I think about the possibility of me winning, I want to model myself after Rick, and I'll tell you why.
Hey, watch that. He actually returns his own phone call.
Okay, I call him on the phone and ask him to go to Nancy's.
And
he'd
his
be
own
there
emails.
In a minute. He'd be there in a minute. He is such an amazing man. He works so hard. And what he did when he would sit at a table with the people in his courtroom, Bob, I can see myself doing that. I can see myself sitting at a table with a family face-to-face, not with a robe on, not on the bench, sitting there face-to-face with them and saying to them, let's get this done. And Rick Pfeiffer has to be the single hardest public servant I have ever observed in my entire life.
In terms of hard working?
Hard. First of all, he'd be touring the courthouse at, 8 in the morning looking for action. He would stay till the end. The man works like he's a workhorse. And you know what? Everything he's ever done, nobody, I think, has had any issues with him. He's a very quiet, polite, humble man. He has served Columbus in ways that I don't think people will ever appreciate.
All right. Any other judicial role models?
Well, in Franklin County?
Or nationally, when you look around, even it doesn't even have to be judicial. When
well,
you look at
okay.
people in
right.
American history,
okay. Well, I want the listeners to know that I'm as farthest thing from Judge Judy as you get. I don't get her. I don't understand her at all. I'm in the study of U.S. presidents. I also I'm an artist. I paint, and I love to paint. I think I'm very creative.
And what's your style?
Well, I do watercolors, I do landscapes, I do portraits, I do pets.
Peacocks?
you know, my dad, he's 90, he does peacocks, and like I said, my dad's 90, he's still alive, he's a World War II veteran, and he's been an inspiration for me, and he has been the most creative, artistic, loving father that anybody could have.
All right, you're in the middle of this campaign, we got about 5 minutes left. What do you want to tell the listeners out there? Why Eddie Pfau?
Well, why me? Geez, Bob, that's tough. I love Charlie Chan movies, and I love Charlie Chan, and he says, I'm so humbled. I have been really humbled by the process and what has happened. I want to say that from the bottom of my heart, I know that I have the experience to do this. I also think I have the judicial temperament. I think that I have an aggregate of life experience that might offer our court something different than we've seen before. I want the chance to serve the community. I feel as if I have this opportunity that I will work as hard as Rick Pfeiffer. I will deliver competency, expediency, and I think that I will solve families' problems. I feel that if you ask around to a lot of magistrates, they will tell you that Eddie Pfau is really good at solving these cases. Bob, one of the things that came up again and again as I was a guardian ad litem was lawyers would appoint me at the last moment, kind of maybe after they spent their money, because I've heard it a million times, Eddie will solve it, Eddie will fix it, Eddie will end the case. And I did, and I was good at that. I'm very proud of that, what I did. I never made a lot of money as a guardian, and I've never made a lot of money as a lawyer.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, having only been there about three times, my big skill was
three
saying,
bad times.
my big skill was saying, "What the hell?" So I mean, that's a real skill. Actually,
it is.
I mean,
I know.
This
is a joke. I always say, "Where's the courthouse bar?" It is very stressful there. It is really hard. It takes a lot out of individuals. But you know, Bob, real quick. We've talked about mental health issues. Also, lawyers. I watch lawyers.
One of the highest stress rates.
Bob,
alcohol.
Bob, I want a support
drug
group.
Drug problems.
Right. Listen, Bob. If I'm elected to this office, I want to have also some kind of group where we can talk, where we can meet and talk about our cases and our clients. How many times you go somewhere and you meet a lawyer and they start talking about their fact pattern? I'm frankly getting tired of it. But you know, Bob, how many times? But lawyers also need relief. And our court system can't function until the clients and the judges and the bailiffs and the social workers and the clerks have an opportunity to talk to someone about the stress they're dealing with. Because let's face it, there's a lot of stress out. There's a lot of stress in that courthouse. And you feel it from the time you walk through the metal detector.
And the, you know, deadlines and a lot at stake. And really, and I know you touched on this earlier, the last 2 minutes, is that people have called it fast food justice.
Jeez,
thousands
served. Okay, I think it's food pantry justice. It's that bad. Oh. Everything's out of date. Everything's out of date you get.
And is it going to be more high-tech under if Eddie Pfau's elected?
Yeah, I'm not the highest tech, but it will be the most real, true, honest, and more human environment, at least in my courtroom.
I'm here talking with Eddie Pfau about the wrap-up. He's running for the Domestic Relations Court. How does somebody contact you who's interested in your campaign?
Well, I not sure how to answer that yet. We're working on a website. We're working really hard. I am endorsed by the Green Party, which I'm proud of. I have a campaign manager named Connie Goodell Newton.
Who, for full disclosure, is my law partner.
Okay, Bob. But, and Mallory Murphy's my campaign treasurer. And, she's in Gahanna, and if anybody wanted to contribute, they could send something to her. She's at 146 Granville Road, Suite D in Gahanna, Ohio. 43230. They can certainly call me if they want. Anytime, I'd be flattered. Again, it's Eddie Fowle at 614-843-4939. And I'd be willing to talk to anybody or go anywhere and talk to anybody about my thoughts for this job. And I thank you.
All right, Eddie Fowle, candidate for Domestic Relations Court. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you, Bob.